This is LIS Radio, a production of the School of Information Science and Learning Technologies at the University of Missouri Columbia.
And you're listening to the sound of the beautiful Missouri Waltz, brought to you, believe it or not, by Lawrence Welk. The program this evening is Show Me Libraries. This is the first in what we hope is going to be a long and interesting series. Our guest tonight is Sarah Parker, the State Librarian of Missouri, and we'll be talking to her in a minute. I have a couple of housekeeping things we need to do first. If you want to call in and ask Sarah or me questions, the toll-free number is 866-768-5843. That's 866-768-5843. Or if you happen to be in Columbia, the number is 884-3803. Or if you're shy, I have the trusty laptop engaged here, and you can email me at cvc@missouri.edu. Did I mention this is Charlie Seavey? That's who it is. If you do get on the air and you're listening to us on your trusty computer, do turn the sound down on the computer or we get this nasty feedback loop and it blows out my eardrums, which is probably a bad thing, although my students might feel differently. Well, our guest this evening is just a wonderful person, Sarah Parker, the State Librarian of Missouri that I've had the great pleasure of working with for the last 5 years. And she's recently announced her retirement. She'll be with us through the end of December. She's beating me out the door by a year, and I'm insanely jealous. Sarah, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Charlie.
Glad to hear it. We're listening, cast of thousands is listening to us talk, and we actually never know who's listening or isn't. You've had a long and varied career. You've been in and out of Missouri at the State Library, and before that you were down in Springfield and in the Greene County, I guess before it was Springfield Greene. What's the great part about being a librarian in Missouri?
Well, I think Missouri does libraries the right way. Libraries here are separate political subdivisions. They're not parts of counties, or for the most part, they're not parts of cities. And being a separate political subdivision, the trustees are responsible for the governing. There is a voted tax levy so that the people decide about levels of library service. That is different than the way most states do libraries.
Yeah, one of the things I did before I came here to Missouri, I was in New Mexico, and I interviewed for the position of head librarian at a city down there, and I would have been in the Parks and Recreation Department. And Missouri public libraries are, in fact, very well insulated from city government, which presumably keeps any political monkey shines to a bare minimum. How do you feel about this is kind of a touchy question, but a lot in the Missouri system depends on the Board of Trustees. I have observed boards of trustees who like to micromanage libraries instead of letting the librarian run the place. You want to address that issue, or is any horror stories? Or
well, you know, we try to do a session on that every time we do training for trustees, and we try to train trustees about once a year. I think in some instances the trustees have to make judgments, and if they have a lot of confidence in the library director, they're not going to micromanage. If they sense that things are maybe beginning to slip or they want a different direction for the library, I'm hoping they're going to talk to that director. But yes, we have had some micromanagement.
I think it does happen. Now, I will admit, I I'm not close enough anywhere, and watching the board of Daniel Boone Regional Library, for instance, here in Columbia, I don't sense any of that. I mean, Melissa Carr very definitely is the head librarian, and it seems to me she's got a very good working relationship with the board as it exists here.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And she's one of our finest library directors, and that has always been a strong library board.
I think just observing the actions. When I first interviewed here, the building was in the strip down of the bare bones mode, and we drove by on Broadway, and I looked at it, my goodness, it looks like Beirut. And, oh no, that's the public library. Well, it's being remodeled, they told me.
Yes.
It was quite a remodeling job. Sarah, state libraries, when I was in library school, a fellow that was running the library school at the time said that he thought there were two places in library land where somebody could really make a difference. One was in library education, the other was in state libraries. You, at the end of your career here, you agree with that assessment? Or
I do agree with that assessment, and probably that's part of the reason why I wanted to be a state librarian, is to some extent that's where you really have impact. Isn't that probably why you're a library school educator?
Exactly.
Yes.
I did. I worked in libraries for 8 years before I went off to go to doctor school in Wisconsin. But what that guy had said early in my career when I was getting my MLS had stuck with me. And, you know, I have thought occasionally about going into state libraries. It's never worked out that way, and I'm, you know, reasonably happy here in library education. Do you want to observe any changes in library education in Missouri since you've been here way back when at Springfield Green? And, you know, the school here has gone through a fair amount of turmoil at various times.
Yes, and Charlie, I'll have to fess up that my degree is not from Missouri.
Well, I was going to get around to asking you that, actually. And where did you get your degree?
My degree is from Emporia, Kansas.
Oh, well. Yeah.
And the reason for that is that when I received a scholarship long ago and was ready to go to library school, the Missouri Library School was not then accredited. And everyone says, don't worry, Sarah, it'll be accredited by the time you graduate.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't want to take a chance. And so the school at Emporia was accredited, was the nearest, most convenient place for me to go, and I got a leave of absence from Springfield to
right next door there.
Yeah, and I think yes, there has been some good changes in the library school and some very reasonable growth, and I think particularly in recent years, where it's had such strong support for the Vice President for Academic Affairs and the new positioning of the school with a department that helps keep it strong, we have a well-grounded, healthy library school, and that's not always been true in Missouri.
Yeah, that's very, and I was not fishing for compliments here, by the way. I really wanted to know. My first real knowledge of the library school here was through a fellow named Ed Miller, who I suspect you remember.
I do.
Was dean, and he wound up down in Arizona after he retired out of here. And so I had heard stories about the MU school. And the whole, the merger, more or less, with the educational technology folks is really not uncommon nationwide. There are very few truly independent library schools left. The strong ones are all merged with somebody or other. So, but it's nice to know that from the practitioners, from the field's point of view, that we're still doing a good job up here, and we certainly hope we keep that up. So the other question I've got about state libraries for you, Sarah, is there's many, many models for where the state library is situated in state government. Some are almost kind of independent. Some are in what amounts to a Department of Education. There are a number in the Secretary of State's office. In New Mexico, it's in a funny thing called the Office of Cultural Affairs, but that's an almost unique to New Mexico situation. Give you a blank slate for putting the state library in state government somewhere. What's your take on placing?
Well, the one kind I haven't experienced is being under the legislature, which Arizona is,
mm-hmm.
and it's a
right.
thriving state library.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in 4 state libraries. 2 were under Departments of Education. 1 was under an independent commission, and 1 was under the elected Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there is great strength in independent commissions if the appointments made to those commissions are strong and if the commission is able to operate somewhat free of partisan politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the reason that the Missouri State Library is under an elected Secretary of State is that the state library felt libraries were lost in the Department of Higher Education.
Mm-hmm.
The phrase they use is, "We were a little rowboat among a great many battleships." And in helping to get the move out of the Department of Higher Education to an elected Secretary of State, what they did was pick up a kind of advocacy for libraries that had not happened in Missouri. And the state library has now been under, 4 Secretaries of State. I've served under 3 Secretaries
mm-hmm.
of State. Each one has been a tremendously strong advocate for libraries.
Yes, certainly. I got here when Secretary Blunt, now Governor Blunt, was in charge, and it always struck me that he was very supportive of you, of the state library, and the library community in general. And it seems to me that Robin Carnahan is continuing in that mode.
She's very much continuing in that mode. Becky Cook was also a very strong supporter of libraries. And so we've seen, I think, a lot of progress in Missouri under this particular structure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is the structure that exists next door in Illinois. Was it when the change came around, which would have been what?
1993.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say early 90s. Was it modeled on Illinois?
It was modeled on Illinois, and at that time, Florida was the same successful model.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing the progress, but particularly with Illinois as a next-door neighbor,
mm-hmm.
that was the model chosen.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually didn't know until this conversation that the state library had been under the Department of Higher Education, which strikes me as not a very good spot, given there are some...
Well, the history is that Missouri started out under an independent commission.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Little Hoover reforms went through Missouri in, I think, the 50s,
mm-hmm.
everybody had to go somewhere. And many independent commissions were put within departments. I think the legend is that the state library was scheduled to go under the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education.
Yeah.
And the library community said, no, we prefer the Department of Higher Education, and we're successful in getting it put under the Department of Higher
mm-hmm.
Education.
It seems to me that any kind of an education department, in a way, it doesn't exactly put barriers around what a state library might do, but it sends kind of a message that maybe limits the role of the state library or people's concept of the state library. And in stretching that a little bit, actually the concept of what a public library is?
Well, Pennsylvania had an interesting structure. The governor appoints a secretary of education, and the secretary of education has three commissioners underneath him or her: a commissioner of elementary and secondary education, a commissioner of higher education, and a commissioner of libraries. And so it was an equal structure. The difference, I think, is that the amount of attention that has to be given to K-12 education is such that things get out of proportion in terms of the attention within the department.
Yeah, in any given state, there's going to be a whole lot more school districts than there are public libraries,
right,
would be my guess right offhand. Yeah, yeah. It's it's remarked a little while ago about Arizona, and the state librarian there is indeed reports to a joint committee of the legislature. And most of the time that works, although when I got there many, many years ago, there was a legislator who had been in the House for 50 years or something like that. When she finally lost an election, I think she was 94 years old, and she kind of regarded the state library as her personal property. Now, she isn't there anymore, and the situation has changed somewhat, and I think the incumbent state librarian has got a very good working relationship with the legislature, but there are dangers in legislative control, I think, as well.
Yes, and one of those is probably the question of partisan politics.
Yeah, yeah, which is, again, my take on the public library structure in Missouri is that it's as well insulated from partisan politics as I can imagine. State librarians are still, to some degree, at risk, I think, and in a legislative situation like Arizona, maybe more than others. Although, in the end, any library, if somebody chooses to make a big political issue out of it, the structure isn't going to matter. There's going to be an uproar.
Yeah, and the importance is if one is going to do that, one chooses the winning side.
well, let's not go down this. I'm thinking right at the moment of what's the county down in Florida right now that's just a huge uproar between. Well, since I can't remember, let's not go down that road.
Well, and I meant that to be humorous, not.
Yes, I know you did. I mean, one is never sure what the winning side is going to be.
That's right.
But I think, you know, whenever I've taught public libraries, I've always told the students that the public library at some level is a political institution.
Yes.
And not in the partisan sense, because you simply cannot play that game. But in the sense that it is a public agency and it operates in a political milieu, and you simply cannot be unaware of that.
That's right. And I was mentored by a state librarian who taught me that it was important that we make libraries winners and not losers.
Exactly, exactly. I think I've watched many years ago, you probably remember Fred Glaser, the state librarian of West Virginia, who was an old Saturday Night Live phrase, a wild and crazy guy. And Fred worked with Republican legislators and Democratic legislators, and same thing on the governors, and I think was very successful in bringing a lot of new funding into public libraries in West Virginia. I actually got offered a job there once and thought about it for a while. But you mentioned the State Library of Pennsylvania, and I want to roll back the clock a little bit to when you were at Pennsylvania. And a friend of mine once claimed to me that your fingerprints are all over the LSTA Act, as it passed in the mid-90s. He may have been a state librarian at that time. Uh-huh. And so I did a little digging around in the dear old internet and Google and all that, and son of a gun, you do get mentioned frequently. So that was kind of an exciting time because LSCA had been under attack on and off. Various presidents of both parties had tried to zero the thing out budget-wise, and Congress all put it back in, and then somebody gestured hypnotically, and it becomes LSTA, and the IMLS is put together, and are there Sarah Parker fingerprints all over that legislation?
Well, I don't know if there are Sarah Parker fingerprints, but it was an exciting time, and it was very interesting because one of the fathers of LSTA was William Goodling of mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, and another founding father was Pat Williams of Montana. And I, of course, had known Representative Williams coming from Montana, got to know Representative Goodling and his staff very well. And the other thing is that the Capitol at Harrisburg is very physically close to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So I could be there to work late at night with the staff of the congressional committees. But there were an awful lot of people who worked very hard to get us from LSCA to LSTA.
Yeah, it's very clear from the public record that I've dug around and found is that a lot of people, in fact, were involved in all that, which echoes back to the passage of the original LSA in 1956, if memory serves.
That's right.
Which had been, you know, a goal of ALA since just immediately post-World War II, and was our first big lobbying effort and first effort at actually having national legislation to provide funding for public libraries at the local level. Somebody observed once, and I can't remember who this is, that the biggest impact of LSA and LSCA was that it strengthened the state libraries.
I think that's certainly true. I think I would put equally important was the provision of library service in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we started in 1956. And the nature of libraries in starting out in cities and places of substantial population, I don't think we would have had any of the rural development if we had not had LSCA. But certainly the fact that the administration of the federal money had to be through a state library agency meant the states had to create one if they didn't have one, and they had to provide for that library development function in the state library if that library development function was not already there.
Yeah, the development function was not a universal in state libraries. Yep. At that time. Many, not all, but many state libraries were quite literally legislative reference or executive,
yes,
branch reference,
mm-hmm,
libraries. Some made the transition better than others. The Iowa State Library, for instance, and New Hampshire, as I recall. In Arizona, the state library at that time was in fact basically a legislative reference service. And the state librarian simply resigned. He wasn't going to have anything,
yeah,
to do with any statewide development and all that kind of stuff. What happened, and I haven't followed this, the state of Washington was trying to kill their state library. Did that actually happen, Sarah?
No, it didn't. And part of the solution and success in Washington was that the elected Secretary of State stepped forward and said, it works in other states, let's try it here. And so what the legislature did, rather than kill the state library, was transferred under the elected Secretary of State.
Yeah, I wondered about that, because the governor had said what looked to me like some singularly not very bright things to say about the state library, and I'm glad they survived out of all that.
It's a very complex state library, because for one thing, it has a large staff which provides the library service in the state correctional facilities. And so the idea that a lot of money could be saved was, based on some things that you usually don't have those kinds of expenditures within a state library's operations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know how it works in Missouri, but in Arizona, the whole state correctional library services were under the State Department of Jails, or whatever the heck they called the thing out there.
Well, in Missouri, they're under the State Department of Corrections.
Yeah, probably the same outfit,
yeah.
Which seems to me a more fair funding measure. Because actually hiring people to work there is somewhat of a problem. Sarah, you're looking back at the end of a career here, and what's your hope for Missouri libraries? What do you see happening in the next 5 years after Sarah Parker retires?
Well, I'd like to see, good financial growth and strong staff, which is part of what you do, because we are facing a tremendous number of impending retirements. We're a graying profession, and it's showing up in a lot of vacancies in a lot of libraries. What I'd also like to see is that Missouri citizens have access to really good content of information through the leadership of libraries, and that includes the development of knowledge systems that are going to be accessible to the person on the street, so that everybody has what they need in the way of both information skills and information on which to make good life decisions. And to reach that, I think there's some needed work that needs to be done at Missouri in terms of library coordination, library cooperation. And Missouri has a rich history of that, so I think Missouri is going to be really successful at pulling off some things that other states will envy.
Well, I hope so, and we're always looking to be innovative here. You were talking about information skills was part of that hope, and I think given the complexity of locating information both in the physical form in the library, let alone all this stuff out there on the World Wide Web, do you see the role of the librarian changing and becoming more of a teacher in that sense in the public library setting?
Well, either teacher or perhaps information broker. Long ago, on the floor of a public library, I was taught not to respond, "Let me teach you the card catalog." My response was to go and get what the person needed and give it to them. I don't know if I think we may have erred too much on the side of educating users. I guess I believe that the strength of libraries is they work with individuals. And so the extent to which a person wants to learn it plays into the equation. But sometimes I think our role as librarians is just simply to deliver what's needed.
Yeah, this is a long-standing debate, and I'm sure it's going to be going on long after both you and I are, in fact, retired. Sarah, they're telling me we're just about out of time here. I want to thank you so much
for
being with us. I have enjoyed greatly working with you over the last 4 years that I've been here, and I wish you joy in retirement.
Thank you.
And thank you. And we are on out of here. The music is still the Missouri Waltz. Bye, Sarah.